Thank you, Olivia, and thank you, everyone. It's great to be here with you and be part of this really fun series about things Jesus never said. And one of the things Jesus never said that we're looking at today is God must have wanted another angel. Now, we all face death and grief and loss and sorrow. God must have wanted another angel is something people say when they are searching for a reason that they hope will somehow comfort a person who is dealing with sorrow. But the problem with that is that death is always unfair, and death is always unexplainable, so searching for a reason isn't usually the best approach to take. Now, this cliche, God must have wanted another angel, it could really be covered in three different sermons, but I chose just one. So the first way you could approach this is you could ask the question, what are angels? And of course, we'd find out that angels are a completely different kind of creature from people. And we know that Jesus became one of us. Jesus became a human being, not an angel. And then the other way we can look at this misquote is to have a sermon about what happens to us when we die. And Jesus promises us, his people, that when we die, we will receive glorified bodies, like his own body, of course, because he became human, like one of us. So we are becoming like Jesus. We're not becoming like angels. Becoming like Jesus is a much better thing. And the third way to approach this, and this is the way I decided to do it today, is to look at grief, looking at an example of a woman who was dealing with her own grief and also trying to comfort another person who was grieving. We'll look at Ruth's recovery from the story of Ruth in the Old Testament. And the story of Ruth is really the story of two women recovering from terrible loss. The story is especially helpful because Naomi, the older woman, is a woman who goes so far as to give up all hope. She blames God for her loss and sorrow, and she really doesn't expect God to ever do anything good for her again. Naomi's daughter-in-law dealt with her own grief, and she helps Naomi with her loss. So the story of Ruth really begins with grief piled on top of grief. First, the crops fail. No harvest. Leads to severe famine. Elimelech and Naomi's family lost their home and their place. They moved to a strange country. And while they're living in this foreign land, all the men in the family die. Naomi's husband, Elimelech, dies. And her sons, Mahlon and Chilion, both die. And Chilion was Ruth's husband. So after all this loss, Naomi heads back to Bethlehem, where they came from. With her is Ruth. Ruth goes along with her, and of course, Naomi goes back home thinking, really, that God has just turned against her. So let's look at from Ruth chapter 1, verses 20 to 22. Naomi replied to the women of the town, "Don't call me Naomi, which means sweetness, but call me Mara, bitter. For the Almighty has made me very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has returned me empty. Why would you call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has deemed me guilty?" Thus Naomi returned. And Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, returned with her from the territory of Moab. They arrived in Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Naomi looked at her life. Everything seems to be dying. She comes back to Bethlehem, where everything is coming to life. The barley harvest has been renewed. The barley harvest has begun. But Naomi could not see any reason for hope. She believed she would never receive a blessing from the Lord. She even tries to get rid of Ruth, which isn't uncommon for a person dealing with sorrow. She tries to get rid of the one person who can help her the most. But how can anyone help Naomi? Well, Ruth found a way. Naomi blamed God, but Ruth doesn't contradict her. Ruth never says, God's not against you. Ruth did not demand that Naomi be hopeful when Naomi could not be hopeful. Ruth never said to Naomi, don't worry, things will get better. When we face grief, we don't need someone telling us not to grieve. When you face grief, you don't need someone telling you not to grieve. Ruth didn't tell Naomi anything about what Naomi should do. She didn't tell Naomi anything about what Naomi should feel. Ruth simply told Naomi what Ruth was going to do. Ruth said to Naomi, you can't get rid of me. I'm going to stick with you. When grief struck, Ruth remained. Look at Ruth chapter 1, verses 15 to 18. Naomi said, look, your sister-in-law is returning to her people and to her gods. Turn back after your sister-in-law. Now just think about that cliche, that thing Jesus never said. God must have needed another angel. Now compare that to what Ruth is going to say. Ruth replied, don't urge me to abandon you, to turn back from following after you. Wherever you go, I will go. And wherever you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Wherever you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do this to me and more so if even death separates me from you. Naomi was convinced. She could not get rid of Ruth. She could not escape Ruth's relentless, persistent presence. When Naomi saw that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped speaking about it. Years ago, workmen were completing a bridge in San Francisco. At that time, it was the longest bridge in the world, and it cost $77 million. During the construction of the first part of the bridge, no safety devices were used, and 23 men fell to their death. In the construction of the second part of the bridge, it was decided to install the world's largest safety net, even though it would cost $100,000. It saved lives, and work went from 15 to 25% faster because the workers were relieved of their fear of falling. The safety net ended up saving lives and also time and money. When grief struck, Ruth did not scold her mother-in-law for blaming God. Ruth did not criticize her mother-in-law for giving up hope. When grief struck, Ruth remained. She stayed like a safety net underneath Naomi. Now we'll see, when goodness grew, Ruth remained. Naomi and Ruth, as I said, they came back to Bethlehem. They were feeling empty. At the same time they were feeling empty, the fields around them had become full for harvest. That's difficult when you're feeling empty to deal with someone else's fullness. But in those days, there were some farmers who obeyed God's teaching. God told the farmers to leave grain in the fields for the poor. And it was God's wisdom that made it possible for people who had lost everything to find new blessings. Empty lives could become full. In Leviticus 19, verses 9 and 10, we hear this description of what God taught the farmers. When you harvest your land's produce, you must not harvest all the way to the edge of your field. And don't gather up every remaining bit of your harvest. Also, do not pick up your Do not pick your vineyard clean or gather up all the grapes that have fallen there. Leave these items for the poor and the immigrant. I am the Lord your God. So Ruth is reaping from the generosity. She goes out to reap from the generosity that's flowing from what God taught his people and the obedience of those farmers to what God told them to do. Ruth had been hurt. Death had been unfair to her. But Ruth did not let her grief keep her from taking hold of what God was providing through God's people. Ruth stepped outside her grief to go and reap the blessings that were all around her, the blessing that the God of life and the obedient people of God were providing, what they were offering. So even though death took Ruth by surprise, Ruth planned for a full life. When sorrow surprised her, she followed through with plans to be happy. But Ruth did not instruct her mother-in-law. Ruth simply did what she did. She remained, and now she goes out to reap. Listen to Ruth chapter 2, verses 4 to 7. Just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem. He said to the harvesters, "May the Lord be with you." And they said to him, "May the Lord bless you." Boaz said to the young men, the man who was overseeing the harvesters, "To whom does this young woman belong?" The young man who was overseeing the harvesters answered, "She's a young Moabite woman, the one who returned with Naomi from the territory of Moab. She said, 'Please let me glean so that I might gather up grain from among the bundles behind the harvesters.' She arrived and has been on her feet from the morning until now, and has sat down for only a moment." There's a story about a caretaker at a cemetery. He received a check every month from a woman who was an invalid in a hospital. The check was for fresh flowers for the grave of her son who had been killed in a tragic automobile accident. One day, a car drove up into the cemetery and stopped in front of the caretaker's office. In the back seat sat this frail woman who had been sending the checks for the flowers. She was obviously near death herself. The caretaker went up to the car window. She rolled down the window so that he could talk with her. "I am Mrs. Wilson," the woman whispered. "I'm the one who has been placing the fresh flowers on my son's grave." "Yes, I know," said the caretaker. "I have come here today," the woman explained, "to make arrangements for you to keep placing flowers on my son's grave. The doctors tell me I don't have long to live." Without knowing why, the caretaker spoke up. "You know, ma'am, I was always sorry you kept sending the money for the flowers." The woman turned away. She turned back again. "Do you realize what you are saying?" "Yes," said the caretaker, "I know, but I see so many people in hospitals, in homes, in prisons who need cheering up. Here in the graveyard, there is no one to see and smell the beauty of the flowers." The woman didn't answer, of course. She rolled up her window, gave the signal for the driver to leave. Months later, the woman returned to the cemetery. This time she was driving herself. This time she walked into the caretaker's office. And she said, when she met him, "You were right about the flowers. After I got back to the hospital, I couldn't get your words out of my mind, so I started buying flowers for other people in the hospital. It gave me such a feeling of joy. It made me so happy. The doctors don't know why I'm getting well, but I do." In the face of grief, we often ask, "Why, Lord?" And God must have wanted another angel is a very weak attempt and a very wrong attempt to answer that question of why. But why is not the best question to ask, because why doesn't always have an answer Oftentimes, in the case of death, there is no sufficient answer for why. A better question to ask is, what? What? Say to the Lord, say to Jesus, Jesus, what are you and I going to do now? What are we going to do now? Even though Ruth was grieving, the world around her was growing. And so Ruth went out to reap. And God led her to the fields of her Redeemer. While Ruth was reaping the blessings she could find, God was working in the background, working out blessings that she could not hope for, blessings that she could not imagine. Let's look at Ruth chapter 2, verses 18 to 20. Ruth's mother-in-law saw what Ruth had gleaned. Her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? May the one who noticed you be blessed." She told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, "The name of the man with whom I work today is Boaz." Naomi replied to her daughter-in-law, May he be blessed by the Lord who hasn't abandoned his faithfulness with the living or with the dead." Boy, that's a change. Naomi said to her, "The man is one of our close relatives. He's one of our redeemers." When redemption dawned, Ruth received. Sometimes when we grieve, we forget or we can't see that God still has love, still has help, still has strength to give us. Ruth did not miss God's redemption when it was put in front of her, and the Lord's blessings began to unfold. As those blessings unfolded, Ruth continued to be able to follow God's lead. She followed that lead, as we always have to do throughout our entire lives, step by step. She didn't know where she was going. She's following the Lord's lead step by step. And Ruth opened up to the people of God, that God, the people God was using to bless her life. God was guiding Ruth from behind the scenes. Ruth had met many eligible young men in the fields. Some of them would have married her, but Ruth waited for God's best redemption. Even Naomi stops grieving long enough to now to start to give Ruth some advice, which is the position she should be playing as the mother-in-law. Chapter 3, verse 18. "Sit tight, my daughter," Naomi replied, "until you know how it turns out. The man won't rest until he resolves the matter today." So Naomi's advice is now really describing the attitude that Ruth already had. Ruth gently brought this woman back, this woman who had no hope. She brings her back to trust and to hope. Ruth brought Naomi back by remaining, reaping, and receiving. Ruth didn't contradict Naomi's grief. Ruth did not utter worn-out cliches. Ruth didn't demand Naomi be hopeful. Naomi began to hope, not because Ruth scolded her into hope, but because Ruth remained. She reaped, she received. John Kavanaugh tells a story about a student who visited a woman in an extended care hospital. The old woman had some kind of dreadful disease that gradually took away her powers month after month. The student was drawn to the strange grace and force of the woman's joy. When she could no longer move her arms and legs, she would say, "I'm just so happy I can move my neck." When she could no longer move her neck, she would say, "I'm just so happy I can hear and see." The young student asked the woman what would happen when she couldn't hear or see anymore. The woman answered gently, "Well, I'll just be happy that you come and visit me." Let's look at Ruth chapter 4, verse 13 to 17. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, and she gave birth to a son. The woman said to Naomi, "Your daughter-in-law, who loves you, has given birth to him. She's better for you than seven sons." Naomi took the child and held him to her breast, and she became his guardian.
The neighborhood women gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi." They called his name Obed. He became Jesse's father and David's grandfather. So this is really the story of our redemption, the very beginnings of that line of royalty that comes to us as Jesus, our Lord and our King. And Ruth becomes our grandmother, just like she's Jesus, one of Jesus' grandmothers. And she starts out as a one who's a stranger to the covenants, just like many of us were strangers to the covenants. She comes in and invites us to be part of that family. Natalie Sleeth, you might be familiar with her as a writer of hymns. She wrote a poem that's now called The Hymn of Promise. And she wrote about her composition of this poem. She writes, "I seem to have been very much involved in pondering the ideas of life and death, spring and winter, Good Friday and Easter, the whole reawakening of the world that happens every spring. One evening, we entertained a friend for supper, and he too had been pondering such themes and even shared a poem by T.S. Eliot, in which there was a phrase, something like, 'In our end is our beginning.' That was virtually the catalyst for the form of the text of Hymn of Promise, which I wrote the next day or two. Soon after writing Hymn of Promise, my husband Ronald became sick with what turned out to be a terminal illness. As the end neared, he asked me to use Hymn of Promise as one of the anthems at his funeral service, which was done. And I subsequently dedicated the piece to him. Again, a mysterious set of circumstances, but perhaps again, a sort of preparation." Now, in this poem that we're going to look at, Natalie Sleeth describes what Ruth already knew. We don't always need to know why bad things happen. Often we can't know. All the explanations just sound empty to us. So instead of getting stuck on the answer to why, we move into the greatest mystery of all. We move into God, who in Jesus has said what Ruth said. Jesus says what Ruth said. No matter how hard you try, you can't get rid of me. I will stay with you. I will remain with you. The great mystery of God's relentless, persistent presence. That puts potential even to our loss, the thing that seems most empty, because of God's persistent, relentless presence, even those things that seem empty have potential for us. And we don't have to talk about it. We just begin to look, and we begin to see God's presence as it's shown to us. Now, as you hear this poem, hopefully these lines won't just become more cliches. Instead, I think Natalie Sleeth was just looking around. She's not looking for answers, but she's looking for signs. There's a big difference. Not looking for answers, looking for signs of remaining, of reaping, of receiving, signs of something God alone can see. So let's look at this poem. "In the bulb, there is a flower. In the seed, an apple tree. In cocoons, a hidden promise, butterflies will soon be free. In the cold and snow of winter, there's a spring that waits to be unrevealed until its season, something God alone can see. There's a song in every silence, seeking word and melody. There's a dawn in every darkness, bringing hope to you and me. From the past will come the future, what it holds, a mystery, unrevealed until its season, something God alone can see. In our end is our beginning, in our time infinity. In our doubt there is believing, in our life eternity. In our death, a resurrection, at the last, a victory. unrevealed until its season, something God alone can see. If you know it, let's just sing that verse, last verse together. In our end is our beginning, in our time infinity. In our doubt there is believing, in our life eternity. In our death a resurrection, at the last a victory. Unrevealed until its season, something God alone can see.
Let's be in prayer as we prepare to share the Lord's Supper together.